Thanks. And just on the Drug Addiction Treatment Act is a sweeping new piece of legislation that Ann talked about. It allows physicians in office-based settings to treat patients for opioid addiction, doing what physicians do best, and that's write prescriptions for drugs. It's a major development. We now have over 20,000 physicians certified to do that. It's a big milestone for us, especially when the expected number of physicians we thought would be interested in treating opioid-addicted patients in their office-based settings would be around 6,000. So we've tripled that amount. I think Dr. Wallen might be one of those physicians. Great. I bet the mouse advances. I have absolutely no relationships to disclose. Federal government employee. I don't have any contracts or anything with pharmaceutical industry people at all. So no relationships to disclose. What I thought I'd talk about this morning to sort of set stage for the later speakers is just the background piece on substance abuse trends in the U.S. A little bit about illicit drugs, more about prescription drugs, their abuse, their availability, and the mortality associated with them. I think it's a major public health issue, and it's important that we have it at the APHA conference this year. Then a few initiatives that I can talk about, being, you know, a prescription drug type person working with FDA all those years, now over at SAMHSA, focusing on the prescription drug abuse end of the opioid overdose problem, which we're here to talk about. Things like dosing guidelines, prescriber, consumer education, and training are all very active ideas that are going forth to reduce opioid overdoses in the U.S. Fits in nicely with SAMHSA's new strategic initiatives, especially the one about preventing substance abuse and mental illness. This is the top priority of our administrator, Pamela Hyde, and a lot of resources are being focused into preventing prescription drug abuse and concomitant prescription opioid overdoses. And a lot of people look at our number one substance abuse measurement instrument, the National Survey on Drug Use and Health. If you were here, you might have gone to the demonstration at the SAMHSA, where you can actually download and do your own analyses of these data. It's a very comprehensive assessment system. National Survey on Drug Use and Health used to be known as the National Household Survey. And it's an annual survey. It goes out to 67,000 people. It's a representative sample of the U.S. population. Homeless people are oversampled, and it's a good representative sample. We had some less than good news with the release of the report 2 months ago in September. Overall, current illicit drug use, that's people who reported use in the last month, rose in 2009, the 2009 report, from 8% to 8.7%. A lot of people think that was driven by the non-medical use of marijuana, and non-medical use of marijuana, just the abuse of marijuana. Prescription drugs and the non-medical use of prescription drugs also rose from this 2008 to 2009 in this survey. Methamphetamine went up after showing several years of decreases. And, you know, this is what it looks like pictorially. Illicit drug use sort of stabilizing in the last few years at 8%, shooting up to 8.7%, and that's a significant increase from 2008 to 2009, driven a lot by marijuana. The perceived risks of marijuana have dropped. People do not believe it to be an unsafe substance for abuse purposes, and their perceived risks have dropped as well. And what do you know? The abuse of marijuana increases. Psychotherapeutics, which I'll talk more about, is the prescription drugs, and they increased from 2008 to 2009 from 2.5% to 2.8%. Just translating those percentages into raw numbers, past month illicit drug use, that means current illicit drug users, it's around 22 million people, and the psychotherapeutics, around 7 million people in the U.S. today are using psychotherapeutic medications for non-medical uses. Non-medical use means that it was either used without a prescription or used with a prescription that was not for the person who was using it. That's our definition of non-medical use. And you see this is much higher than cocaine, hallucinogens, and way higher than heroin. which is around 200,000 people. Marijuana, as you see from our survey, is still the gateway drug. 3.1 million people initiated substance abuse in the U.S., and 59% of them started their abuse career with marijuana. So it's still the gateway drug. But take a look at the yellow part of this pie chart. That's pain relievers, 17%. If you add in other prescription drugs like tranquilizers, sedative stimulants, more than 25%, one out of four people, start abusing drugs in the U.S., using prescription drugs as their gateway into illicit drug use. If you just look at the number of people, number of illicit initiates of illicit substances, whether it was the first time or not, prescription drugs are way ahead of marijuana. You know, that's pain relievers, tranquilizers, stimulants, and sedatives. The second bar on the left is pain relievers. The third one is tranquilizers. That's the class that includes benzodiazepine substances. So when we talk about opioid overdose deaths a little bit later, often it's a combination of an opioid and a benzodiazepine sedative that's working together to produce that opioid-related overdose. Translating the current non-medical users of prescription pain relievers, it's around 5,200,000 people current in the U.S. And around 1.4 million of those report that they are dependent on those substances. Talk a little bit about illicit drug use from our Drug Abuse Warning Network. It's a second instrument SAMHSA has in place. It's a representative sample of metropolitan hospitals, and it measures emergency department visits associated with drug abuse. And just between 2004 and 2008, non-medical use of opioid pain relievers increased 112%, 2004 to 2008. The benzodiazepines that I talked about, Valium, Alprazolam, they increased 90%. They didn't quite double, but almost doubled. And a key thing to keep in mind that the visits involve more than one drug. I'll show you what this means in a second. But this is from our Drug Abuse Warning Network. It shows the trend from 2004 to 2008. The top is oxycodone formulations. The second line is hydrocodone, which is Vicodin, Lortab, things like that. Methadone and unspecified opioids comes in third. But look at the amount. It's around 100,000 people in 2009. Ended up in emergency departments reporting that they were sent there due to the non-medical use of prescription opioids. And as I said, it's usually more than one substance. It's polydrug abuse that's sending people to the emergency departments. And, you know, with methadone, it was methadone alone that sent people to the ED 40% of the time, and 60% it was more than one drug. And even more so with a medication like hydrocodone, Vicodin, Lortab, things like that. And the other drugs that they're reporting when they go to the emergency department for these visits include alcohol, include heroin, include cocaine, benzodiazepines, mostly 40% of the time, but in other illicit substances as well. Talking about benzodiazepines for just a second, the highest one is Alprazolam. And again, just like with oxycodone formulations, it's 100,000 people in 2008 reported to emergency departments due to the non-medical use of just one benzodiazepine. That's Alprazolam. So if you just add all these things together, there are more people going to emergency departments for substance abuse-related problems with prescription drugs than there are for the traditional illicit substances, heroin, cocaine, marijuana. More people are going to emergency departments due to these prescription drugs than what we think of as traditional illicit substances. It's been that way for a few years now. So what do you think might be going on? What are the causes for these increases in prescription opioid abuse? A lot of people claim it's availability, and this slide shows the number of prescriptions for oxycodone and Alprazolam over the last several years. And between 2006 and 2007, or between 2004 and 2007, it hasn't quite doubled in availability, but it's come pretty close. The amount of prescriptions for these substances, oxycodone and Alprazolam, has actually increased around 90% during that period of time. And if we ran it out to 2008, I bet it will have doubled. So it almost equals the exact amount that the number of Dawn Emergency Department cases increased in that period of time, which was 112%. That's between 2004 and 2008. So one might conclude that availability has a lot to do with how much of these substances are abused and ultimately how many people overdose fatally with these substances. This shows a similar increase for methadone from 2004 to 2008. This slide kind of differentiates between male and female. Just off the top of your head, who do you think is prescribed pain relievers more often, men or women? Yeah, it's women, and significantly more. The top line is the prescriptions for women for hydrocodone, which is Vicodin and Lortab. The purple line underneath is for men. And you see the same thing, but much more dramatically, for these benzodiazepine sedative products. The top line is alprazolam, women. And the next line down, around 80 or 90% fewer prescriptions are going to men for these substances. Let's talk a little bit. So that's the abuse. It's going up. The availability of these medications is going up. The death due to these medications, prescription pain relievers and benzodiazepines, is going up as well. It's a slide from the Center for Disease Control, Injury, Death in the U.S. This is age-adjusted death rates per 100,000 population. As you can see, motor vehicle accidents are decreasing as cause of injury deaths, firearm, gunshot accidental deaths decreasing, and poisonings are increasing, almost to the point, as Ann said, they have surpassed motor vehicle accidents in around 16 states. So these are poisoning deaths, but what actually are they? They are drug overdose deaths, and even further refinement, they are indeed a lot, in many cases, prescription drug overdose deaths that are driving these increases in poisonings through the Center for Disease Control Injury section. The top line is cocaine, and you see that decrease in the raw number of deaths between 2006 and 2007. Opioids in general increased during that period of time. Methadone increased and may have leveled off a little bit from 2006 to 2007. Other synthetic opioids, there's a blip in that screen, in that line. It's the this line right here. You see it went up in 2006 and then trailed down a little bit. A lot of people think that is attributed to changes in the or an outbreak of non-pharmaceutical fentanyl that occurred in the late 2006 that drove those deaths up. How many of you have even heard about that quasi-epidemic, and it was reported in the MMWR? Just briefly, I wanted to show that drug overdose deaths vary from state to state. If you're a red state in this graph, it's pretty bad news. You're in the highest percentage level for age-adjusted drug overdose death rates, and yellow is next lowest, and green is the best. You see some large states, California, Texas, New York, with low overdose rates, and you see some high states, mostly in Appalachia, southwest part of the U.S., have the highest rates of drug overdose deaths per capita. And I thought I'd take a look at a few of those states that have the highest rates. The two states with the highest rates are West Virginia and Utah. There was a study that looked at overdose deaths in West Virginia in 2006, focusing on the cause of death and also tying it to prescription drug prescribing databases. And among the findings of those states, people who died from prescription drug overdoses, mostly opioids, did not have prescriptions for those. Only a third of them could be traced to a prescription. But the striking statistic is 94% of them. And they went back and looked at records. Those records showed evidence of drug abuse. And the bottom conclusion was that the majority of the overdose deaths in West Virginia in 2006 were associated with non-medical use and diversion of pharmaceuticals, mainly opioid analgesics. The next state is Utah. They showed a dramatic increase in poisoning deaths between 2005 and 2007. Most of the deaths were hydrocodone and methadone, with oxycodone the highest in recent years. They can look at the kind of characteristics of the people who overdosed in those states. In most of them, 29% of them had three or more drugs related to their overdose. 61% of them had signs of misuse and abuse that identified one of the characteristics of them in this overdose database. Around 82% of them suffered from chronic pain, and 37% of them were obese with a high body mass index. You can get your body mass checked out there in the exhibit section. I had that this morning myself. But Utah tried to do something about this. They introduced a three-pronged approach: research on the causes and risk factors of these opioid overdoses in the state. They developed prescribing guidelines, worked with the medical community, and issued a tentative guideline about no more than 100 milligrams of morphine equivalents a day would be would be a good guideline. You could certainly override that, but it was developed in conjunction with the medical community. And also the third part was educating healthcare providers, patients, insurers, and publics about the risk of opioid overdose deaths. And just to show a good public health response to their initiative, between 2007 and 2008, they showed the largest decrease in overdose deaths. And they attributed a lot to that intervention. You know, as public health people, we can go out and train healthcare professionals about what to look for, how to screen patients for substance abuse related problems that should be the subject of an intervention. And there are aberrant drug taking behaviors that are part of education that we provide that physicians and other prescribers can look at and determine whether the person is exhibiting drug seeking behavior and perhaps substance abuse. These are the predictive values of aberrant drug behavior. I won't go through all of them. There are less predictive ones that are probably more indicative of inadequate pain treatment and pseudo-addiction. And, you know, if you just look at it, the physicians who prescribe these, they apply all these screening tools to their patients, find that most people don't fall into the categories exhibiting this behavior. And we're really looking at this small part of the population, around 10%. Who exhibit these procedures that are these characteristics that should be the subject of some kind of intervention. And all this information is available by physicians accessing the prescription drug monitoring programs within their state. So just to summarize, drug abuse and prescription drug abuse are obviously increasing, went up significantly just this year. Data reflect that polydrug exposure is really a significant factor in why people overdose. Availability has been increasing commensurably. It's almost a straight relationship there between availability, overdoses, and abuse. PMPs, dosing guidelines, prescriber consumer education programs are all in place, and I think they should be very effective public health interventions to reduce prescription opioid overdose problems. Thank you very much.